Good afternoon. Welcome to this afternoon's edition of the Rich Urban Show. We bring you news and views from the unification principle point of view. We're very happy to have Erica Kalinich on today. She's running for governor on the Libertarian Party. So yeah, please introduce yourself.
Sure, thank you. My name is Erica Kalinich. As you mentioned, I'm the Libertarian candidate for governor. This is my second go around at this. I was the candidate for governor in 2020. I have been raised in West Virginia the majority of my life, all but 18 months when I was an infant, and my parents had me in Columbus, Ohio. I'm a business owner here in West Virginia. I started my law firm in this state in 2005. And I've built my firm now to have four locations in the state of West Virginia with upwards of now almost 50 employees with my husband Carl, who's my law partner. We do have a daughter. Her name is Iris. She's a soldier in the West Virginia National Guard. And I love West Virginia. I love this state. When I'm not working or running for governor, I'm very involved in the community. I donate a lot of my time to civic organizations and nonprofits just to try to make where we live a better place. And I thought, I'd try to do that on a higher level and become governor.
Wow, great. Yeah, that's super. Yeah, civic engagement is so important. I was looking over your platforms. I do have some questions, but in general, like, what do you think the biggest problem or problems facing West Virginia right now are?
Well, there are so many, right? When people ask me that question, I'm like, oh my gosh, I could write a novel. I think in general, it would be just the lack of transparency, specifically, coming from the governor's office. And I could wrap that up and talk about, CPS and foster care, state police, Division of Corrections, DHS, all of those things. But I think really what that comes back to is a lack of transparency, a lack of accountability, and governmental interference. So I have plans to reform all of those things. And I think it would be hard for me to pick just one of those things. But certainly when you talk about like the biggest problem, that's the biggest problem. I mean, we have a lot of others. We need to look at the economy, we need to look at tax reform, but if I'm asked to pick one, it's probably transparency and accountability.
Yeah. Well, that does relate. I mean, I noticed you had some proposals for tax reform, and in fact, property tax is close to my heart. I actually have a tax case ongoing with a property in the tax court. But the point being, it seems like transparency is lacking. For instance, in our local assessor's office, they said, like, a property I own went up 130% in one, period. It's like double and 30%. So I dove into it and did a lot of research, and it seems kind of corrupt, but as far as and needing more oversight. So I can understand what you mean by transparency. Let's talk a little more about your property tax proposals. They were interesting, but on the other hand, I wondered, like, well, you can talk about them. I noticed you would cap property taxes after so many years and such a percentage, but it seems like that would drop revenue a lot. And then you mentioned also about the personal income tax, getting rid, I think, if I'm wrong, of course, correct me on anything, getting rid of that. But then again, would that raise property taxes even more? Like, if you're cutting taxes, which is generally good, how do we balance things?
I think we balance it by cutting spending, right? Which is what the Republican supermajority never talks about. They talk about, cutting taxes, and then that's the reaction everybody has. Well, where are we going to go up? Are we going to go up in sales tax? Are we going to go up in property tax? How are we going to make up that revenue? That's the initial instinct that everybody has. But the answer is, we don't have to make up that revenue. We really just overspend. And that doesn't mean that we have to, cut essential services. The first place everybody's mind goes when you say we overspend is, oh my gosh, what about the schools? Oh my gosh, what about the roads? oh my gosh, what about PEIA? But the reality is that, you know, once a government program is created, no one ever goes back to say, hey, is this government program doing what we designed it to do? Is it functioning well? Do we need to be spending the money where we are? So my belief is if we go in and we audit those programs, we're going to find out, and the citizens of West Virginia are going to find out, that we're actually wasting an awful lot of money. And no one in Charleston cares because it's not their money, right? It's our money. When they want to expand a program, they want to add something, they just add to. They never go in and say, like, where can we cut back? You know, you and I in our households, if we wanted to get a new car, we would say, okay, maybe we don't need to buy the Kraft brand mac and cheese. Maybe we can stop getting our coffee every day at Starbucks and make our coffee at home. We'd figure out ways to make the car payment. The government just says, we're still going to buy the Kraft brand mac and cheese. We're still going to get Starbucks every day. And we're just going to add the car payment to it. Yeah. They don't go in and look. You know, take education, for example.
Oh, yeah. I'm working that locally, but go ahead.
Yeah. We spend right in the middle of the pack with other states and our nation in education, and we get results at the bottom. What does that say? That says to me, we actually don't have to throw more money at education. It just says that we're misspending. But nobody ever goes in and looks at that. They just say, oh my gosh, you can't cut spending in education because our results are so bad. We need more money. So for me, we absolutely can cut spending. I don't think we can do it recklessly. I think people, you know, I have to surround myself in my administration with people who are smarter than me to get in there, to audit programs, to audit results, and figure out where can we cut it.
Yeah.
But we can definitely cut spending. Yeah,
some comment on that. So we have an excess levy here that's, for the schools, 40% of our property tax. So now they want to renew it again, although it doesn't expire till 2026 for the tune of $25 million. And I'm trying to dig into where this money's going, and it's very opaque, as your first point was the transparency. And actually, the superintendent just sent me something, and at first I got to look at it again, but it said something like they collected over the last 3 years $45 million more because of the skyrocketing property tax in Jefferson County, and now they want us to renew it again. And I say, no, it's crazy. So I know what you mean. More money does not equal better education. We have a super bloated, like, central office staff.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
So I do see what the point you're making. Yeah, it'll take a whole change of, like, thinking, I think. So that's one issue. You mentioned, like, a property tax cap. So, like, I was talking to Bill Ridenour, our legislator, about, you know, having some kind of property tax cap. And because that's crazy, you know, even the tax office mentioned, oh, well, no law keeps us from raising your tax 130%. What do you think about that? I mean, that seems ripe for abuse, because when you're allowed to do such drastic raises, which they try to justify, like I say, I'm fighting it, it's ripe for corruption, I think.
It is. And, you know, I will say, if you look at West Virginia compared to other places in the United States, our property taxes are actually our real estate taxes. Let me say that. Not our taxes on our personal property, but our real estate taxes actually aren't that bad. We actually have pretty favorable laws compared to other states. That doesn't mean that we couldn't get some wild, wild legislature in there at some point in time that wouldn't do something. So for me, I feel like passing a cap that prohibits, you know, skyrocketing increases. If West Virginia goes the way that I would like to see it go, then everybody in the United States realizes what an awesome, awesome state we have, and they start to move here. If that happens, by its very nature, right, property values start to increase. Counties start to see a big pot of money. State starts to see a big pot of money, and the legislature says, I think we can make some money here. let's start increasing the percentages, let's start going a little bit wild, which is why I feel like we should preempt that and put a cap on it. You know, we actually already saw after COVID a net migration in West Virginia, which we haven't seen in a long time, but people, as the remote workforce started to increase and corporations realized that, you know, hey, working from home actually is an option. We started to see a lot of people, you know, find beauty in our mountains and want to come here and work remotely. And, you know, as that spreads, which I think it should, you know, people are good for the economy, we might start to see that spiral out of control. And I would just like to see something passed that preemptively, you know, puts a cap on property taxes.
So is it, is the cap, I saw in the, I was reading some of the code around taxes. I think there's some, supposedly some kind of cap, but it's a cap on revenue. It didn't make any sense to me. It's like, oh, the school's not supposed to get more in such revenue. If they get too much, they'll keep it until later. Well, that doesn't have to help the property owner. What I'm talking about is a cap on values of the actual property. What are you talking about?
On the percentage that they could charge. So if your value's worth, or if your property's worth $500,000, we don't want them to eventually be able to increase the property tax to say, hey, we charge a 15% property tax one day, right? So capping it at a percentage of the assessed value.
Okay. So it wouldn't, it's a different concept that I'm thinking. I'm thinking of a concept where your value in any year could only go up so much. That's different.
Which would certainly be another way to do it. I just don't want to see them be able to start, you know, assessing a 10, 15, 25% property tax, which, you know, you see in some states that start gaining a lot of population that they raise that percentage.
I see. Okay.
Both are dangerous. Increasing assessed values too quickly or increasing the percentage that they can tax you on, either is dangerous.
Yeah.
They probably both need addressed. We probably need to combine our ideas.
Well, yeah. Anyway, it's kind of a whole nother issue, but not another issue, but there seems to be there's manipulation the way they calculate these values. But anyway, I'm working on that as far as my own case, but it goes way beyond that because it's affecting everybody in the whole county. So, yeah, I wanted to ask you, you mentioned about education. It seems like you're for universal vouchers, if I understood, or the money following the child. And what do you think of like the current Hope Scholarship? Is that like a step in the right direction?
I think it's a step in the right direction. I still think that we could do more. There are still some limitations with the Hope Scholarship that could be expanded. Mm. But I think it was a step in the right direction. You know, I always say I don't give the Republican supermajority credit for much. I'm not a big fan. But I will give them that I think that they did advance school choice in West Virginia the right way. And, you know, that just comes from my belief that I feel like families should have the right and the ability to educate their kids in whatever manner they feel is best for their children. Mm-hmm. And, you know, public school, and listen, I sent my daughter to public school. I have some ideas about how we can make public school better as well, because I'm not one of those people who says, well, we're just going to send, you know, everybody to charter schools or public schools, or I'm sorry, charter schools or private schools and leave public schools behind. But to that end, public school's not for everyone, and not everyone thrives in public school. And if that's a situation and those kids can get a better education somewhere else, who are we to tell those parents that they can't send their kids there?
Yeah, I see you were favoring more like the parents being more involved. And on that topic, kind of the family, I'd like to posit something like in our nonprofit called Urban Life Training, we work with youth education, specifically, you know, encouraging youth. And I worked in, I was in D.C. till like 8 years ago in with the inner city youth, like encouraging them to abstain before marriage, form a family, that kind of thing. And I would posit that with 50% of children now born outside of marriage in West Virginia, that is actually a greater driver of every stress on society, whether it be discipline issues, crime, workforce readiness, than anything else. Would you, you know, the fact that the call of the two parent, male, female, family, whatever, is like, has declined or whatever. Anyways, a lot of children born outside of marriage. Would you kind of agree, disagree, have another take on it or what?
You know, I don't know that I have enough, I guess, data either way. What I will agree with, that, which I think is what you're saying, is that it's all the problems are definitely linked. So I think we're probably on the same page about that. I was just talking to somebody about this over the weekend on the campaign trail, that I think we kind of go the wrong direction sometimes talking about education or drug problems or the amount of kids in foster care or, you know, the economy or workforce participation as isolated problems, because they're not. They're all connected. Like, all of the problems that West Virginia has are all connected. And I think we have to look at them as a holistic problem. For example, if we just try to attack, well, why aren't more people in West Virginia participating in the workforce? You really have to start to get down into all of those other problems that are connected. They're definitely all related. You're 100% correct about that.
Okay. All right. And so were you disappointed that, as far as on another topic, if you call medical freedom vaccination choice, I did see your position, but anyway, you can expound on it yourself. Like, do you think, so I was surprised when I moved here 8 years ago, you know, I lived in D.C., considered very whatever, liberal place, but actually they have better laws about medical freedom than we do. So what about this, you know, no school, no vaccines, no school policy? Do you think that has to go as soon as possible?
Yeah, I yes, I mean, you know, I support, as you mentioned, medical freedom in West Virginia. The vaccine situation is sad. And, you know, I'm not, you know, when I get out there and say that, people will say, you know, people on the left will say, oh, you're an anti-vaxxer. Not necessarily. You know, I have the vaccines. My parents got me the vaccines when I was a kid. It doesn't mean I'm an anti-vaxxer. It just means if you have your reasons for not taking the vaccine, I respect that. And I feel that you should have the right to do that. You know, when the COVID vaccine came out through my law practice, I represented a significant number of folks who sought exemptions under the West Virginia Human Rights Act to the COVID vaccine and were not granted that exemption and were fired. There were actually laws in West Virginia protecting the employers who fired them. And then that kind of, you know, I think reignited the vaccine conversation in West Virginia, which, you know, I think is what spurred the bill that was passing through the West Virginia legislature this past session that didn't pass, which
it passed, but Governor Justice vetoed it.
Well,
I mean, it passed in some form.
Correct. I just think that it was sad that it didn't pass in its original form. Mm-hmm. Because it was really just meant, you know, people that have religious beliefs against vaccinations, folks that medically can't get vaccinations. I mean, I represent currently, you know, a lady who's suing West Virginia University Medicine because she physically cannot take the vaccine and that prohibits her from working. That shouldn't happen. It shouldn't prohibit a child from going to school. And, you know, I think it's tragic that somehow we have gotten ourselves into a mindset that we're ostracizing those folks. I think it extends beyond vaccines. You know, I think if I have a medical condition and I go to my doctor and he says, listen, you know, and I trust my medical doctor, listen, I understand some people don't trust medicine or their doctors, but that's fine. But if I trust my doctor and he says, hey, Erica, there's this very experimental thing out here. It's not been approved by the FDA. might kill you, might make you more sick, but there's a chance it'll help. And I am a sane person, and I say, listen, I want to take it, doc. I want to try it. I should be allowed to do that, and no one should stand in my way.
Mm-hmm.
To be my right to medical freedom, I should have a right to do that.
Right to try. So is that, yeah. By the way, is that regulated more at the federal or state level or both? That kind of thing. I heard President Trump talking about right to try, or that at some point. I don't know.
I don't think it should be regulated at all.
I see. Okay.
All right. I think that, you know, in terms of regulation of medicine and things like that, I think it should be up to the individual consumer. Mm. You know, I think that there can be private research entities. I don't think it should be government funded. And the folks that are putting out those different medical treatments can say, listen, we've been researched, tested, and tried through this particular organization. And, you know, consumers can do their research and decide whether or not they trust this organization or not.
Okay. So to recap it, I mean, for like school attendance, do we need vaccine requirements, or can the parents decide?
I think it's up to the parents.
Okay. That's clear enough. Yeah. I mean, I agree personally with that, but okay. You mentioned also on another issue about the, well, you have a lot of good ideas in your platform, I think. You're mentioning about reducing a regulation for like business licensing. So what would be like an example that you know about here in West Virginia of like unnecessary licensing or regulation of a trade or something in that nature?
Oh gosh, sir, we could talk for so long. Let's start with the fact that you have to have a certificate of need to run a trash company. So you have to have a permission slip from the state of West Virginia to haul trash, which is the most ridiculous thing in the world.
What's a certificate of need? I'm sorry, I don't know what that means.
A certificate of need is there are certain businesses that have to, when they want to open up shop, they have to go to the state of West Virginia and they have to fill out it's basically a permission slip. There's no other word for it. It's a big, huge application that says, this is why we think there is a need in the area of West Virginia where we want to operate for our business. And that particular business's competitors get an opportunity to object to the certificate of need.
That's weird.
So if you wanted to get a pickup truck and haul trash for your neighbors, you would have to go to the state of West Virginia and say, you know, dear state, here is my certificate of need and why my neighbors need me to haul trash for them. And waste management would have the ability to say, no, this gentleman doesn't need to haul trash in his neighborhood. We are his competitor and we don't think it's necessary. And the state of West Virginia would get to decide whether or not you could do business or not.
Okay. Well, that makes sense. Somebody up in my area, I have a property, they, well, this is kind of the other side coin. I mean, overall, what you're saying that makes sense, reducing regulation. They apparently they collected, people were complaining on the website that they collected like for a month. Maybe they weren't bonded or whatever. I don't know what. Anyway, they ripped some people off. But I don't know if it's because they didn't fill out this huge license or just they didn't have basic integrity. But I guess my question is, how would you protect people against something like that? Or that's not the job of the government or what?
I think it's the job of the judicial system.
Mm-hmm.
So if folks were getting ripped off, they can file, you know, they can file a lawsuit. And that's, I mean, it's the job of the judicial system. It has been.
Yeah. You know, well, I think some people
as long
paid
as we've
like
had judges
for some advance, maybe a month or something, and then, or a quarter. And then the company like whoop, evaporated, whatever.
I guess that's the job of the market. You know, that's the job of a smart consumer is to do research and decide. I mean, in today's day and age, Google reviews and
Right, right, right.
Yelp
That's
and
a good
things like
point.
that.
Yeah, good point about that.
But I guess to further answer your question, you have to have a license to be a chimney sweep apprentice
Okay.
in West Virginia. We have more licensing for occupations in West Virginia than a significant majority of other states. We require more training hours for counselors and therapists than any of our neighboring states. We require more testing and restrictions. It's harder for barbers to get licensed in West Virginia than it is the state of Maryland. I did a barbershop tour as part of my campaign, and a young man who opened up his barbershop in Charlestown was telling me how he came to Charlestown from Maryland as a he was already a licensed, barber, had already passed all the tests, thought it would be better for him to operate his business in Charlestown. He had to drive physically all the way from Charlestown to Huntington
Wow.
to submit his application in person and to take the test in person in today's day and age.
Oh, I bet you I know which shop that is because I saw a new shop downtown. Charles, you said Charlestown, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
But
So I
yeah, that's
mean,
crazy.
just things like that people don't think of. So one of the things I've been doing this summer is going to fairs and festivals. The state tax department actually sent an auditor to audit crafters to make sure they had business licensing and that they were properly filling out their business and inventory taxes.
You mean like people at the local craft fairs?
Yes.
Right. Taxes. Yeah, exactly. Well, good point. A good point about that. All right. Let's ask about another area. I noticed like well, a couple things. I noticed that you were for cannabis or marijuana reform, and also well, let's talk about that for a minute. So, correct me if I'm wrong. We have medical marijuana now, right?
We do.
Okay. So you want to make it though so that it can be obtained for any reason, or can you want to explain more about your position?
Sure. My position is just for decriminalization. I don't think it's something that we should put people in jail for. I think it should be, I don't like the term legal because I think that that implies a certain amount of regulation and taxing, and I just think it implies a lot of things that I would not support, but I do think that marijuana in West Virginia should not be criminal.
Okay. Well, places like it seems like places like Colorado, correct me if I get any of the states wrong or anything, or California, where it is legal. They're having different kinds of issues. Like I was reading in California, and maybe it's because it's not exactly what you're talking about, where the people, like, I guess, like you're saying, the state wanted to tax it. So there are these like illegal marijuana houses where they're different entities. I guess it's maybe they're like crime mobs or whatever, growing all this marijuana secretly and stuff, and problems like that. Or in general, I mean, anyway, also from my viewpoint, I mean, I think that it makes sense if you need marijuana for medical conditions. But I'm wondering about what message will it send, or is it really good? Also, how would that be done? I mean, it's kind of like if you can, use marijuana freely, I guess it would be age restricted, obviously, sort of like alcohol. But then is that sending the right message to our youth? I mean, I grew up in the 70s, whatever. I know people
Sure.
smoke marijuana, but is that what we really want to do? I guess what I'm trying to say.
Well, I mean, during Prohibition, you probably would have asked me the same thing about gin and beer, right? You probably would have said, well, is legalizing it really the message that we want to send to our youth? But when we legalized alcohol, what happened is we got rid of or substantially shrunk the American mafia. We got rid of the majority of the violence that surrounded making illegal alcohol. We got rid of most of the crime and the racketeering that surrounded the illegal production of alcohol. It became safer. People got less sick because they weren't making gin in their bathtubs that contained bacteria. So a lot of positive things happened. So maybe not. But what I'll say is people that want to smoke marijuana regardless of the fact that it's illegal. So yeah. Then all we're doing is sending a message to our kids that it's okay to commit a crime.
So you would do it differently? Like, so I understand, like, in states like Colorado or California, it's probably a big moneymaker. I guess it's making money in West Virginia, too, to some extent. But already. But you would not make it like that somehow? In other words, you're saying, well, tell me what you're thinking exactly.
Well, in those states, I think it's, in my opinion, it's too heavily regulated. And I think that that's what causes the issues. So in under my plan, there would be a certain amount of self-grow that would be permissible. Just like in West Virginia now, there's a certain amount of moonshine that people are allowed to make for their own consumption. And, you know, that's okay. So I don't think that you're ever going to prohibit, if you decriminalize it, you're not going to prohibit people or corporations that want to grow it, sell it at stores. And if that happens, then it's certainly going to be taxed. It's certainly going to be there. I just don't think that it should be a heavily regulated industry. You can probably find quotes out there where I've said that marijuana should be like tomatoes, because you can grow tomatoes in your garden and nobody's coming around like hyper inspecting your tomatoes. Also, nobody's like, you know, selling your tomatoes on the street corner in the middle of the night. You know what else isn't in tomatoes? Fentanyl. There's no fentanyl in tomatoes, because when you legalize or decriminalize tomatoes, there's just not a market to put fentanyl in tomatoes at that point in time.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Well, I might disagree on some of those things, but what about, like, I noticed, like, I mean, generally I like, you know, a lot of the principles you've outlined are really common sense, but what about the idea, and I didn't see that in your position paper, but I didn't read everything, about restricting access to some things for minors? For instance, what about access of pornography by minors? Would you restrict that? What about, you mentioned, you know, let people do what they like as far as LGBTQ. That kind of makes sense. But then on the other hand, you have this kind of movement around the country, whereas in my mind, well, first of all, you have this crazy surgery stuff, which I don't think that should be allowed personally. But and anyway, you can give me your take on that. And then secondly, like, most people agree across the board, I think, yeah, do whatever you like, but that's not what happened, you know? It's kind of like, if you don't agree, then we're going to force you to agree. Like, if I say, no, I don't believe in LGBTQ, they say, okay, well, we'll make you agree. Bake us a cake, you know, we'll see you. You don't want to bake a cake? Or that's just one example. But I think you know what I'm getting at. Do you have any, like, thoughts on that?
Well, I mean, you said it, right? My opinion is, and, you know, my political platform is that you should be able to live your life and do what you want as long as you're not hurting anybody else and you're not taking their stuff. And the government shouldn't interfere with your ability to do that. And no one else should interfere with your ability to do that. And that might mean that you and your neighbor don't agree with how you're living your life. It might mean that you and your neighbor don't agree with the values that you teach your children. But if you're not hurting each other and you're not hurting your kids and you're not taking your stuff, the government shouldn't interfere with that. And you shouldn't interfere with your neighbor's ability to do that. So, like,
go ahead.
My personal opinions on you know, the decisions that somebody might choose to make. Like, I certainly understand your argument, and I've heard that argument before, that, you know, folks on the left aren't okay if folks on the right don't, you know, I guess, respect how they live their life. My argument would be, folks on the left, live your life how you want. Folks on the right, if you don't like it, that's okay. I mean, yeah. That's basically how I feel.
You didn't answer about the minor issue. Like, what about restricting access to pornography or things like that? I mean, that's
the law now. I wouldn't change that. Do I think that minors should have access to pornography? I don't.
Okay. So you
would that be considered hurting someone? Yes. Is that hurting a minor? Yes.
Okay. All right. Fair enough on that. You mentioned about asset forfeiture. You wanted to change that because right now we have laws where people don't pay their property tax. Although they did, I'm sure you're aware, reform that recently, I think in 2022, where they have a more extensive process. Like if you're behind your property tax, there has to be, a 2-year period where, you know, you have a chance to bring it up to date and things like that. So one question is, what do you think about the reforms that were made? Were they enough? And if not, like, what would you do? And you mentioned, like, no asset forfeiture, whatever. But what about properties that are, like, dilapidated and non-maintained and stuff like that?
So I guess two-part question. You know, when you're using the term civil asset forfeiture, I mean, when I use that term, I'm talking maybe a little bit more about in the law enforcement sense, when they're taking property that they suspect is in being involved in a crime and seizing it, and you have to sue the state to get your property back. When you're talking about property that's seized by the government for non-payment of taxes,
right?
I mean, do I agree with that in a conceptual sense? No, because I don't agree with taxes in a conceptual sense. So, I mean, that would be my very philosophical answer, is do I think the government should be taking anybody's property? No, I don't agree with eminent domain. I don't agree with any of that. So I'm never going to agree on a philosophical level that any steps that they've made to come, you know, regardless of what they've done, are far enough, because I don't think the government should be taking anybody's property. I think if people don't agree with paying taxes and they don't pay their taxes, that's fine. However, as a lawyer, you know, I understand that that's the law. And if folks don't abide by the law, you know, there are certain consequences that are spelled out, and there are preemptive measures that you can take. It's actually fairly difficult in West Virginia to have your property taken for failure to pay property taxes. As you mentioned, it's a fairly lengthy process. There's a right to reclaim. So as a practical matter, it's actually pretty difficult. Do I think that the cities and counties and municipalities should be able to take your property for being dilapidated? No. But do I think that your neighbors and your community should be able to sue you for providing a nuisance? Yes. I mean, that's community-based justice, and that might be you interfering with their ability to enjoy their property. And then we get back to, you know, don't hurt people and don't take your stuff. You might be interfering with their ability to enjoy their property, and they might be able to hold you accountable. I mean, that's kind of my whole theory on the environment as well. I don't necessarily think that the government should be involved, but if you start interfering with your neighbor's ability to enjoy their property and live healthy lives, there's going to be consequences for that.
Can people, like, in your knowledge, is there a legal base for people to sue people for providing a nuisance, like having a huge dump or trash pile or whatever?
Yeah, there is. There's a civil cause of action for nuisance in West Virginia.
Okay, that's good to know. Okay, well, I know we didn't cover every topic, so yeah, if you'd like to, bring up anything else that's, you know, close to your heart or mind, you know, about your candidacy. And, you know, as we wrap up, feel free.
Sure. I mean, I think one of the things that we didn't hit on is, you know, CPS and foster care reform, which is something that's, you know, pretty near and dear to my heart, just because I've seen so much of that through my law practice. So I do have a lot of the things that you were talking about are from the policy statement that's on my website, which is nowisthetimewv.com. It's about a 35-page policy statement about all the things that I want to do in West Virginia. I would note that I'm the only candidate for governor that has a policy statement and policy positions that they've released. If you go to the other websites, you're not going to find those things. You're going to find kind of canned one sentence, maybe two sentence statements about, you know, I want to make sure all West Virginians have access to broadband, but you're not going to find actual plans about how to get those things done. So in terms of CPS and foster care reform, 60% of kids in West Virginia are being raised by somebody that is not their biological parent, which means most West Virginians are somehow going to be affected or touched by DHS or the CPS or the foster care system. And there are a lot of problems there. And, you know, it's nobody's fault. It doesn't mean that we have bad people in CPS and foster care. It doesn't mean that we have bad people in the justice system. It just means that what we have going on now isn't necessarily workable. And I think that it needs help.
Wait a second, if I can review that. You said 60% of children in West Virginia are not being raised by their biological parents?
Correct.
So does that mean any biological parent, like not even one biological parent?
That's what it means.
That's crazy. I know that 50% of births are outside of marriage, which of course is an interrelated statistic, but 60% not being raised by biological parents, even if they're not married, you're saying that that doesn't account. It doesn't say whether they're married or not, not being raised by biological parents. That's crazy. I need to look that up more. Is that on like some state website or something?
You can find it in various studies. It's, you know, most kids are being raised by grandparents, relatives, sisters, aunts, uncles.
That's massive placement. Crazy. The 50% out of wedlock, I think, is really crazy too. But this is even more crazy because you would think even if people aren't married, you know, they may be raising their kid or kids. But you're saying this is kind of indicating maybe otherwise.
Yeah. And it's most people don't realize it, because what you will see when you start to dig into it is that, you know, kids are living with grandma and grandpa, and you might have the biological parent who's floating in and out of the house. So they're around, but they're not who's actually, you know, raising and or the primary caretaker of the child.
Well, what do you think is driving that, in your opinion?
I think it's a lot of things. If we go back to what we talk about, it's a whole circular problem. I think it's the economy. I think it's what people perceive as lack of opportunity. I think it's poor education. I think it's societal problems. I think it's the fact that we've taught our kids in West Virginia that if they don't leave West Virginia, they're not successful, which has created mental health issues.
Mm-hmm. I still think, though, a big factor would be, you know, the decline of married families. I mean, that has to be a major factor, because I don't think so. I have a little chart I use in my own presentations that it says, like, okay, 1970-ish, 5 to 10% outside of marriage, a birth rate. Now, 50%, that has a profound effect on everything, I believe.
Yeah.
I mean, those things factor in, too. I think you were saying somewhere like with gun violence that, you know, instead of just trying to restrict guns, I see that you are for Second Amendment rights, but that, you know, look more holistically. Why do people want to kill somebody? I mean, people had guns in the 60s or 70s or 50s or whatever. And why so many more shootings now, you know?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, yeah, continue if there's anything else. Otherwise, you could just wrap up. I really appreciate your time.
Yeah, I think that that's all that I want to say. You know, I'm running because, like I said, I care about West Virginia and I care about West Virginia people. And I recognize that we're not all going to have the same views. And I think because we're not all going to have the same views, we should have a government that doesn't force those views one way or another on anybody, and a government that recognizes that they are there for the people and by the people that don't share the same views.
Okay, fair enough. Thank you so much. Okay, well, we'll make this available on any podcast platform at The Richard Urban Show or on our site, visionroot.org. I really, again, appreciate you coming on and, yeah, helping illuminate, you know, why voters should vote for you.
Thank you.
Appreciate okay. All right. Well, see you again in the future. Thank you again.